Welcome to the Plant Spirit Podcast on connecting with plant consciousness and the healing wisdom of nature. If you'd like to learn more on how to communicate directly with plants, visit www.learnplantlanguage.com to register for the free workshop. That's www.learnplantlanguage.com. I'm your host, Sarah Artemisia, and I'm deeply honored and excited to introduce our next guests to the show today. Kaz and Fee are the Seed Sisters, herbal drama queens, and sensory herbalists who have a passion for educating others about plant medicine. Their mission is to connect people with their local plants, promoting empowerment, autonomy, freedom, and diversity in healthcare. Medically trained herbalists with a love and interest in the so-called witching herbs of old, they've worked and played together for many moons, exploring all that the plants have to share. They combine their clinical experience with ritual, art, and creativity to teach herbal medicine in a unique, inspiring, and accessible style led by the very plants themselves. So Kaz and Fee, thank you so much for joining here. I'm excited to have you here.
That's lovely to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Just love your deep connection with the plants, so ancient, and would love to start by exploring really what are the witching herbs and power plants?
Yes, the witching herbs. So for us to talk about the witching herbs, we've got to break down what we mean by the word witch. We, as herbalists and women who help babies get born, we get called witches. It's just part of the language and terminology in the culture in the UK at this time. If you have any kind of, if you've got tarot cards, everyone in your family will call you a witch. You know, that's something I grew up with. If you read the astrology section in the newspaper, people call you a witch. It is common language. And that word witch is an ancient one. And just like any of our words, they take on different meanings in different time zones. And I was thinking about recently the word wicked. So I understand the word wicked means something really good. I was brought up in that era, but I remember describing things as wicked to my grandparents, and my grandmother was horrified because to her something wicked is truly evil. And the word witch has gone through so many different transformations of understanding, and historically my understanding is the word witch was to describe someone who had malintent, and the words cunning folk were what herbalists or people that worked with more psychic abilities would have been called here in the UK. But we adopted this word witch years and years ago. We kind of said, okay, we will be the wild and wicked witches. And we travelled around music festivals and events, donning our black pointy hats and playing in the archetype of witch. And we had a fabulous time and a lot of fun, but we also noticed that we scared a huge portion of the population, because people still have negative connotations and fear around the word witch. And we decided that, you know, our mission, as you beautifully introduced us, our mission is to connect people with nature. And that's everyone. We want every single person to be able to connect with their local plants. And if we scare people, we're not going to be able to achieve that. So that's when we changed and became the Seed Sisters. But we are witches. And what we define witch as is, looking back into older English, weird, wild, wacky, wise women. And that's how we see ourselves. But we don't shout about it too much anymore.
I think it's interesting because we've been saying that we don't shout about it too much anymore, but we have just released a book about the witching herbs and our use of them. So I think our perception of how we're viewed, because with our first book, with the Sensory Herbal Handbook, we felt like we were going a bit in disguise to really get that message out there. And we had this acute awareness of that duality within the word witch, that in the modern era, it's been completely reappropriated, reclaimed as this powerful, embodied, spiritual, connected to nature, generally woman, but not always. And especially not with the gender discussions going on at the minute. You know, anyone can embody that spirit of the witch, but realizing that it holds that duality and it'll never truly let go. We don't believe it'll ever truly let go of those connotations of fear, because it's so entrenched in the fables and the folklore and that history of where it came from to quash and quell and subjugate. And so holding that, realizing that it holds that duality, we moved away from it. But what we have actually done is now gone, okay, this has been a huge part of our journey, and let's write about it now, and let's do it from that balanced perspective rather than that pushy, we're trying to reclaim this word. It's much more, this is us. It's much more embodied now than I feel like in our early 20s when we were feisty, angry herbalist witches out there in the world. We were the wild and wicked witches, and we still are that. I think in some way a little more embodied. We live in houses now, you know,
that, you know, the witching herbs, they also embody the duality that we're talking about here. Those witching herbs have the power to end life and were in amongst our very first murder weapons, you know, the very first arrow poisons, and the ways that whole governments were overthrown was often through poisonings. They were also at the very birth of surgery. You know, a lot of these herbs were the beginnings of anaesthesia. And they're so powerful because they have this ability to both kill, to knock someone out to a level like an anaesthetic, so you can perform surgery. And surgery was being performed in the 1400s. Because of these plants, by women. There were women surgeons in Italy at the time. You know, they are these incredibly powerful, intelligent, wise, wild creatures, these women, who were doing that magic. And they fully understood that each of these plants has a spirit and can alter consciousness just by, you know, picking that plant and creating your medicine, your beginning a dialogue with super powerful entities. So the witching herbs, the so-called witching herbs or the power plants, are quite a lot of different plants. In our book, we focus on the Solanaceae in particular, the nightshade family, but there are others that we touch on, and they have this just depth of history that goes right to the very beginnings of humanity.
Mm-hmm. And being called witching herbs is literally because they were associated with practices that were deemed witchcraft. If you were found with herbal preparations containing these plants, you could be deemed a witch. They had that association because they hold within them such power, the power to heal and support, and the power to end life. You know, the alkaloids that are contained within those plants are the tropane alkaloids, and tropos means to make a change. But Atropa belladonna, deadly nightshade, is the namesake of Atropos, which was the third fate in Greek mythology that cuts the thread of life. So they have the ability to cut and energetic ties, but also the ties of life if misused or abused in that way. So they need to be approached with a particular kind of reverence that has often not been associated with these kind of practices. And that's also where the witchcraft comes in, is really, really knowing your plants, really, really knowing them.
And these plants also have been associated with divinatory techniques, you know, going back to the oracles at Delphi and looking at the origins of practices like necromancy. These plants are held within all of these different psychic and paranormal human practices that are associated with sorcery and witchcraft, magic, basically magic. And what we are super excited about with this work is that there's an opportunity for us to marry this scientific linear with the magical spirals within each of these plants, because we're privileged to have learnt the chemical constituents of each plant, to understand the physiology of the human body and how the plant compounds interact with us. So we've got this medical training, and we're also privileged to have been growing and working ritualistically with these plants. And we can see that through ritual and magic, healing is available. And if we can draw on the actual physical attributes of the plants as well, make remedies and our potions and creams and tinctures, using both aspects for healing is bound to be better than just using one. And it seems like we've spent a few hundred years going slightly off the path and going one way down the scientific track with medicine globally. And it's now time to to stop that and reintegrate the magic. And, you know, we can see a huge resurgence. The term shamanism is now a globally accepted term for a healer. And most people know that. I think it's published in common magazines. That isn't something that was heard about a few years ago. And so people, and yoga as well, people understand that yoga is a practice, and people understand the word mindfulness. And all of these have science behind them that are beginning to understand and to explain why these practices work. So that's the same thing that we want to kind of do in reverse with the plants, and start teaching the magic and start sharing the magic with clinicians and people that are working with all kinds of medicine, especially modern derived, plant derived drugs that are available in all of the hospitals today. Those drugs still have the potential to bring in the magical aspects of the plant within them.
Yeah, I love so much your deep connection with the plants, and also how you have this very grounded clinical training in herbalism, because there's such a cross-pollination or translation or connection between what has, I think, for a very long time been perceived as potentially separate realms, that you bring them together so beautifully. And I'm curious, in your experience, why is it really important to resurrect this ancient tradition of working with the witching herbs in ritual and medicine right now? Like, what is it about the times right now where this feels so important?
We've seen something quite interesting happen in the herbal world, which is what that just alluded to before, in that we were scientifically trained within university to use these herbs clinically in the body for digestive cramps, for tremors in the body, for asthma, because they have these amazing relaxing properties on certain muscles and areas within the body. So that's the witching herbs are used clinically in that way. But right at the turn of the millennium, actually, into around 2000, we, from the research that we've done, we were one of the last years of clinical herbalists that were taught how to even use these herbs clinically. And when we were taught, there was no question about the power and strength and magic of these herbs, but we happened to be using them or working with them rather in that way outside of the clinical setting as well. So it was a natural progression for us to bring those qualities of the plants, those subtle, actually very unsubtle, but in the ways we were working with them in very small doses, those subtle energetic shifts and patterning within people's neurological systems to be able to understand themselves in different ways. We were able to bring that into clinical practice. And what we saw was that even herbalists were losing their way with these herbs and becoming fearful of losing them, of using them. On one herbalist's gathering that we went to doing a talk on these plants years and years ago, out of 50 herbalists that were there, there were one or two that were using any herbs that were on the special list of restricted herbs, and none of them were using these plants. And to us, it just felt like that was a reflection of this severance between that majestic connection to nature that we've been really lucky enough to never have because a severance from, because we've been brought up, both of us, in nature, nature being alive. We can interact with nature, we can talk to nature, it'll respond. And that's what's driven us both together on this work. And that recognition that these plants can bring that reconnection by bridging this gap between that scientific medical herbalist model and this much more ritualistic, spiritual, and actually in some ways unbridled with these plants. There's still quite unknown outcomes. Even when you're using very small doses, you never quite know what it'll bring up for yourself personally at each point. And a bit of that unknown wildness is really what the world is craving right now. It feels like this everything has to be certain, everything has to be measured, has been blown apart in the last few years. And these plants are like, hey, we told you nothing was certain, you know, and that the world is ready to feel back into that wildness and that connection. And these plants are perfectly placed to bring that inspiration.
Yeah, we've been talking about what's wrong in the world for quite a long time and thinking of ways to change it. And to us, the root of the insanity is capitalism or neo-capitalism, greed, and this lust for power. And it's like looking at the problem and being aware of the problem. But what do you do? How do you live and celebrate life knowing that there's all of this oppression and destruction? And so our answer has always been, you know, grassroots community activism. And these plants have given a dimension to the rituals that tap it into that old ancient way of human consciousness, because they've been with us for so long. So I don't think we really know why, but what we've seen, there is a conference called Botanica Obscura that someone called Kobe Michaels is organizing. And Kobe is in, I think Kobe's in Florida, but what he's shown us is that there are a lot of different people working with these plants right now all over the planet. And there is this natural resurgence happening. There's, when we were looking at how many different books there were on the poison plants when before we brought ours out, we were really like encouraged to see there's a lot. And only last year, I think 4 or 5 were published. And it's obvious that these plants are calling and there's something that they want us to do, but we can only really guess because they know, they're the ones that know.
Yeah, I always find it so interesting how the different plants will come forward at different times to support with different planetary things happening. It's such a wild time to be alive right now, working in collaboration with the plants. And, you know, you mentioned working with the Solanaceae family in your book, and I was curious if you could tell us more about this. And in particular, you know, who are some of the herbs that you share about specifically in this book, and why are they so helpful for connecting magic and medicine with modern herbalism and contemporary witchcraft?
So some of the main ones that we mentioned, the nightshade family, so also known as the Solanaceae family. And they also include, that family, plant family also includes potatoes and peppers and chili peppers and aubergine, that I think you call eggplant. And that family is a vast family of foods, really delicious, useful foods, but also very, very powerful medicines. And that family, they all have alkaloids, which provide both their powerful medicine and also their potential poison. And the ones that we talk about mainly in the book, we focus on 3 in detail, and they are henbane, datura, also known as jimson weed, and belladonna, or deadly nightshade. So they're the 3 that we have a really deep hone in on and focus on, and they're the 3 that we've worked with and grown a lot. And over the years, we've run many, many workshops on developing the green unguent, the flying ointment, and we'll do it with a group in ritual, and we will tiny energetic doses of those herbs to blindfolded groups, small groups, and get them to talk about their responses afterwards. And it was just amazing to map these energetic responses on a kind of, not a mass scale because they were relatively small groups, but over the years amassing a lot of information about the blueprint or the picture of these plants and what they can actually offer us. And the qualities of those herbs, although they contain many of the same alkaloids, they're in slightly different levels within the plants. The energy of the plants is very, very different. And it's been really amazing to work with seemingly chemically such similar plants and see how energetically different they really are. So the henbane has this real kind of jovial, uplifting nature to it.
Associated the henbane with the kind of celebration after a death. So when you go to a funeral and afterwards you have a really good wake, and everyone comes together to talk about who's passed, and you might have fabulous music and you may be intoxicated. And the henbane, we've watched the groups after they've taken their blindfolds off and how they interact and how they talk. And it feels quite boisterous and lively. And when you go into the history and look into where henbane was being prescribed and used, the beer, the fact that we brewed with henbane and as normal all through Europe, and henbane is the origin of Pilsen or Pilsner lager, and it is the very first ever drugs law ever passed on the planet was because of henbane, because people were regularly imbibing this as a nightly or daily drink and having these very opened and consciousness connecting experiences with this plant. And we always think it's amazing that they outlawed any other herb in brewing except for hops. And hops is anti-testosteronic, it's mildly depressive. And that was the plant. They say it's because of its taste, but we think other things were afoot there.
That was the beer purity law that came into place right at the end of the 1400s. But the henbane as well, with this kind of jovial response we'd see with people, when you look back at the folklore of henbane, a wreath of henbane was worn as people crossed over the River Styx into the underworld at death. So you have this kind of jovial, celebratory atmosphere, but with this kind of, not exactly sorrow, but a release, a letting go, and allowing that passing over through the celebration. And when you see an energetic response and then look back and are able to overlay that with the folklore and what's been said before about the henbane and the fact it was used in the beer, and then it's like all that knowledge is still there for people to ascertain and get. And any ritual or work that's been developed has always been done in response to the environment, the plants, the people of wherever it's arisen from. And that still exists if people can learn to tap back into these energetics of the plants. So henbane's always one of the ones that we enjoy sharing with others because of that spirit of it. And then the datura, the jimson weed, is much, much more introspective and much more about old ancestral, even like ancient ancestral kind of patterning, and is thought to be the origins of the image of the werewolf and the idea of transformation, personal transformation, what power and strength has brought you here today. Recognizing different aspects of the self and being comfortable to be able to shift into those different aspects of yourself. And it's had a much more, people can barely respond to each other in the groups when they've had that. They're so inside from just tiny energetic drops. You really notice that, because we don't give them the same time, you really notice the datura groups are always a bit like, not sure, how do I express what I've just experienced? Whereas the henbane group are always going, blah, 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 and then I saw this and that happened. And you get this really contrast.
When you look at the thorn apple, so when you look at the datura's seed pod and the spiky thorn apple that breaks open to be filled with tons and tons of little black seeds, but as it cracks open, it has four chambers, very clearly delineated, and is reminiscent of the heart and the four chambers of our heart, but surrounded by this seriously protective, spiky seed pod. And that introspection and that time to give ourselves to really protect our hearts while we go inside and do that exploratory work is an incredible gift from the datura. And we love to draw on her gifts for shape-shifting work. And that's where we delve when we do magical work with the datura. And then, of course, the belladonna, the beautiful lady who has so much history and folklore that surrounds her.
Possibly the most famous worldwide, isn't she, I would say.
Yeah, and responsible for the most deaths, the deadly nightshade, with the most delicious, sweet black cherries. You know, so many of our poisons are acrid or bitter, so you wouldn't want to eat them. But belladonna's cherries are actually quite sweet. So she had this a bit of a Machiavellian trickster vibe to her going on as well. But it's her that we called on. We evoked Atropos at an event, as a ritual at summer solstice, and we have been calling on her to cut the threads of consumerism and greed. And it is the archetype of belladonna that feels like she's leading the way with a clear intent.
That was 4 years ago, and there's been a lot has happened since that. And, you know, it's a bit like the resurgence in the poisons. You're never quite sure how much of an influence our magic and work has had on it, but we've certainly seen this huge upsurge in the last 25 years of us working with these plants. And we did that spell in Prague in 2019 and then watched the world kind of crumble. And it was just interesting to see what had occurred with that. Not saying that that spell caused the world rifts, but it was just interesting to see take to create shift in the world, actually.
And in our worlds, it did. You know, we did a spell, that was the action. So that is what's happened. Belladonna has led this. And in a response to it, we called on Althea, goddess of healing. We held or hold more aspects of the gentle and the kind alongside the severe. But within our book, we have offered up that right to the people, and we've written it out because we do believe that consumerism needs to go. You know, I think there's it's a big issue. I think huge amounts of the world population are addicted to consuming crap. And unless that consumption of crap is ended, how can anything change? And as individuals, we all have a responsibility to look at what we're consuming. You know I do. I regularly, if I walk into a shop, I see pretty shiny things and I think, oh, I want them. And I've got to be really mindful. It's a practice I've done for years. So it is an addictive thing, and it's a shiny magical spell in itself that the marketeers have woven on a lot of humanity, and the plants are calling for it to stop.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's so much about, you know, when we drop into this deep relationship with the plants, it's like the shiny surface things lose their importance as so much. And because we're connected to this much deeper well of connectivity that is connected with the entire interconnected web of life, much more enriching than the latest shiny thing. So, but one of the things that you were just sharing about that is so key. It feels so key to me in your work, and just so key when working with these all plants, and particularly with these power plants, is this aspect of the respect. And I would love to hear from your perspective, why is it so important to approach the witching herbs from a space of respect? And what are some ways that you'd recommend interacting with them safely?
So this is one that we have to obviously inevitably talk about a lot because of the flip side of these herbs. And we don't recommend taking the first thing that you do is ingesting these plants in any way. What we actually say to people is, once you start thinking about these plants and putting them in your consciousness, they will more than likely appear in your yard at work, in your garden, in the rubble out the back of the supermarket. You know what? They'll start to appear because they have that level of connection with the web of consciousness that you were just referring to. And it'll be more than likely that you'll start to find them. But if not, locating seeds, growing the herbs, getting to know them in that way. Because if you have these herbs near you when you sleep, they infiltrate your dreams. It's often enough to grow and draw and connect with and be with them. In fact, sometimes even that can be overwhelming with the connectivity of them if you're not fully prepared for that. But sitting with these plants and really getting to know how they grow and how they look and the differences in them is a really beautiful way to start that connection. And we do write about that in the book. We go deeply into how to begin to connect with the plants. We take through a whole journey of a year, really, with the recipe for the witching ointment in the book as well, because it takes that length of time to harvest the herbs at their different cycles and points. And this is in it for the long haul with these herbs. This is not, let's have a weekend retreat, almighty bosh, because if you approach them in that way, you may never fully come back. And there is no reason why we can't work with these herbs without taking a hedonistic quality to working with them. But there's been so much fear built up around them. So it's about really getting to know them so that you can put that fear to one side, knowing that you're working with them in a respectful, safe way.
And like being respectful, I think this is for all plants. Saying hello is a very base beginning, and talking to a plant, and even from the seed, if you've got a seed, being able to tell the seed what you want. We put our seeds on our altar with intentions of how we'd like to interact, grow, if we have a specific idea of why we want to grow a plant, we tell the plant. And I think that if you can be on your own and let go of all your inhibitions, naturally you might want to hum or sing to a plant. And I think plants love that. I know plants love that. I know when I'm on my own with the plants, I can channel words and songs that feel so right for the moment. They just feel like, you know, when you think about cellular activity and you have the cell membrane with receptors, and there's various chemicals in the body that go into those receptors, it feels like that when you're with a plant, being able to offer voice and the vibrational quality of voice. I think the plant has receptors within it that can infuse the plant with a quality that it loves. And that's what we've seen with the plants we work with. And by having a dialogue with the plant, because it is a dialogue, we can speak out loud with vibrations, but the plants speak through a variety of different means. And through all of our senses, one of the most obvious is our sense of smell. If a plant is in flower or the plant is aromatic anyway, being able to smell the plant elicits this whole range of different feelings inside our own bodies. And it's being able to slow down. And I think that's one of the biggest messages of respect. Slow the fuck down, all of us, because we're all going quite fast as well, and the plants aren't working at that same level of time. So if we can slow down with the plants and get our fingers in the soil so that all of those microbes and particles that are interacting at the level of the plant's roots are also interacting in our fingers, just that kind of behavior is it's fun. It's really good fun and wholesome.
A lot of these plants grow where it's really barren ground. They need very little nutrients, you know, and that is a kind of metaphor for bringing us back from what's become soulless in many ways. It's really poetic that they grow from nothing and burst forth this such powerful beauty. And yeah, they're all the messages that you can get from just growing, working with, observing, being with them. It enriches anyone's life, having plants, especially these ones, in their lives, but any plants.
Absolutely. And that aspect you were just sharing about too, that slowing down piece of really, if we're going to commute, like if we're going to learn a new language, we need to learn the language of the person, or if we're wanting to communicate with a person, we need to learn the language that they're speaking. And the same thing with plants, and the wavelength that they're communicating on is much slower. So how can we really drop into the wavelength of the plants by moving much slower than we normally do, and getting our hands in the soil and really witnessing them through the changes, and how beautiful and valuable this is. And, you know, you mentioned earlier casting a spell at the solstice, and just thinking about the different times of the year, the seasons, the wheel of the year and how certain plants are associated with different times in the wheel of the year. And I'm curious, why, in your experience, are so many of the witching herbs and power plants associated with Samhain at the end of October?
Well, like if you go back to the old, I mean, Samhain's a Celtic term. It's the Celtic calendar. And in the time when that was originated, there was two parts of the year. There's a light part and there's a dark part. And so Samhain is the point where we're going into the dark. And so very basically, it's these plants are associated with the dark and the witch, which who later became associated with Samhain, of course.
And Samhain represents perfectly that unknown, the energy of the harvest dropping down into the earth, the crisp air being this conduit for being able to connect with spirit or ether in a different way, and bringing the plants into those times when subtle connection is what's needed to be able to understand these herbs. They're the perfect time to be working with them and bringing them into it.
And communing with the dead. You know, it's classically a time to remember, celebrate and commune with the dead. And all of these plants have had histories of working with necromancy.
And how would you say that your lives have been enriched by being in deep relationship with these plants?
Hard to know a time before.
I don't know, when we turned up, we had an avocado pit that had germinated. So we put the avocado in front of the house. It's a south-facing wall. And one day the henbane just self-seeded in there. And it's like, oh, okay. And then the datura self-seeded, and someone gifted us a mandrake and belladonna. Everything just turned up. All these plants just kind of knocked on the door, literally. And but these plants are super special. We love them. But all of the plants, every single one of them, are incredible and hold as much magic and as much mystery. And you know, I was thinking about plantain, so common Plantago lanceolata was what I was thinking about. And we were once running a workshop somewhere. We'd never been on the land and we needed some plantain, and there was none. I'd walked it, there was none. And just at the point where my mind was going, oh, you know, rubbish, blah blah, I just thought, oh, how about if I just walk in a circle and sing plantain a bit? And there's a part of my mind that says, oh, you're a nutter. What a ridiculous thought. But there's another part that knows it's true. And that's exactly what I did. And then there was plantain. And these magical plants are so magical because of their strength of action. Plantain has the same strength of action. And if we take that time to connect deeply enough with the plantain, we will find as many gifts and as many wonders within the plantain. And there is no hierarchy really in the plants at all. You know, plantain's ancient, from surviving the ice ages. One of our oldest ancestors.
There is something quite interesting that's happened with the poisons for our life's work, and that is that because within our medical herbalist profession, we were practicing what might be thought of as quite edgy practices on something that was already quite an edgy profession. We certainly weren't invited to, back in the day, many herbalist conferences to speak, or we were thought of as, you know, this fringe, the wild and wicked witches, giving medical herbalism a bad name. And we stuck to our guns because we weren't going to change the way that we were incorporating just the magic and the science together. And we had to really just sit in that and not waver, but it was hard at times. And then the psychedelic community of the resurgence in interest in studying altered states of consciousness as medicine started coming into the fore, and conferences popping up around the world. And it was actually getting invited to speak at the psychedelic conferences, and people being really interested in our work and how this work with the plants in a magical and medicinal way could be interpreted, be of benefit, was then what started to make the herbal medicine community go, oh, there may be some value in this work, and can you come and speak about these plants? And but it took the psychedelic community, which is full of all sorts of people, from traditional healers to uber allopathic scientific people that are doing psychedelic research that have never taken psychedelics before. You know, there's a whole plethora of a gamut of people that are interested in plants and compounds that alter consciousness. But that it made us visible in a way, working with these plants, which you've got to be, you know, we felt we had to be quite secretive about in the early stages, were what started to make our work much more visible. And that was a really interesting kind of dynamic and path that occurred for us along the way. And it has taken 25 years for us to get this book out of working with these plants. And that is on the back of, well, not the back of, but as part of this huge resurgence. And it does feel like it's just come at the time where it will be received. And that feels really special. And that has been a huge, we often say we're guided by the plants themselves. And we have, you know, we have been ultimately when the time's been right.
Yeah. I guess they're like, I was thinking about like the differentiation of plants. And I think that the poisons, the power plants, are a bit like the rock and roll stars of the plant world, because they're a bit edgy. They would be the ones in the hotel room that were smashing up the tellies and throwing them out the window. They are sexual. There's a lot of connection to sacred sexuality, and they deal in death, and they do alter consciousness. So it is like sex and drugs and rock and roll with them. And maybe the plantains more like folk ballads. Just trying to like feel into it.
I love that. That totally puts so much into context for me, how like, I mean, since I was a kid, I was always like, what about the plantains of the world? Like, everyone loves the flowers. What about the plantains?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's the folk ballads. There we go.
I need power.
I love that. Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, we are also really interested in making the songs of nature loads more appealing to the young people of the world. You know, it's really hard to get the youth engaged in folk ballads these days, and they're generally more interested in rock and roll. We've worked with Halfway House, like a homeless hostel of young people, to initiate a herbal medicine garden. When they saw that cannabis sativa seeds were on the list, all they wanted to grow, they just wanted a garden of cannabis. And we were like, okay, how can we guide this into something that's got a message, that says something? And cannabis sativa, you know, hemp was included in the garden along the way, but they created this beautiful garden that had a story about how toxic are you, and leading up to the more potentially alkaloid rich plants had a lot more of the allopathic pharmaceutical medicines alongside them. So it was displayed how the pharmaceutical medicines are derived from the plants and get more common as the plants get increasingly more potentially rich in alkaloids. And yeah, but that is what engages the kids. And I mean, I'm really interested in getting some modern nature music out there and how we can connect them in with the local environment through some, I think drum and bass is back in my era. I don't know if it's still that drill, nature drill music. But yeah, and maybe these plants have got something to offer towards that as well.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm so excited to see what evolves out of that for you all, because your work is so guided by the plants. I love that. You're working in such deep partnership, collaboration, deep listening, deep honoring, even when it's like painful and hard and whatever. It's like, if the plants are guiding it, you're going to do it. And I just love that about your work. And so tell us, how can people find out more about you, your work, your books? How can we find you?
So we've got a website, which is seedsisters.co.uk, sisters with an A-S rather than E-R-S at the end. So seedsisters.co.uk. And most of our work is available through that. And we've got some brilliant projects in the pipeline. We've got a poisons course that accompanies the book that we're busy creating at the minute. We've got a members area that we're looking to develop. We've got a monthly online webinar about different topics. We survey people and say, what are you interested in? And then we put it on for them, because it's all about getting it out there. But joining our newsletter through the website, we've got a free download of a PDF, 3 charms and spells and 3 ways you can bring herbs into your daily life. So you can download the PDF and sign up for our newsletters with loads of cool info and updates on what we're up to and all of that. So that's probably the best way, is joining the newsletter. And
and also watch this space, because we are beginning our herbal comedy. We've been developing and having fun dressing up as plants and doing performance lectures. And last year we went on a comedy script writing course. And what we'd like to do is free up some time so we can go and work with like proper theatre people who will give us proper feedback. And then, because comedy is a vehicle of being able to say some really hard hitting truths without making people get really, really bored of hearing all the dark stuff all the time. So yeah, we're developing that, and we got some great costumes. I'm Chili in the next incarnation, and Fiona's Datura, and we'll be on
the Solanaceae theme. Yeah. When we've done fruity climate comedy dressed as plums and apples, which we took to COP26, the big climate conference on the Fringe Festival there. So yeah, that's once we've got all the juicy foundations of our online world for people to tuck into, then yeah, watch this space on the fruity plant comedy that we'll also be putting in the members area as well, like snippets on what we're up to with all of that as well, because I don't know, surely people want to watch what we do and what we're up to. Video ourselves all the time.
We did an event, we went to Oxford Farming Conference and did a bit of a skit, and we came away going, it's brilliant, we're just being completely ridiculous. We are literally being just ridiculous caricatures. and it's great. Why not?
It was brilliant. The venue that they put us in, the Oxford Farming Conference, is an amazing event that's all about the future of food and farming. And the venue that they put us in the main corridor, but it had a perfect mirror with bulbs around it, like you get in a dressing room. So we had this like dressing room to get ready in, and we were like these diva plants going in to do a performance to lots and lots of the farming community in the UK and worldwide. There's lots of amazing people there, not all at our event, but the whole event. So yes, having fun along the way, keeping it exciting for us, but constantly finding different new ways to get the information out there and be able to talk to people on different levels. And
yeah, because we want to talk to people eventually. We just want to talk to people that don't know that plants exist, because there's a lot of them. You know, we meet people regularly that have no idea about the life cycle of a plant. People literally don't know that a tree blossoms before it fruits. They don't understand about pollination. And these are educated people. These are people who, you know, I live close to London and we run a community orchard where people come out and rent a little glamping space. And these are professional city dwellers that come out and say things like, in March, where are all the apples? And, you know, I laugh, but it's not really funny. It is something that is seriously remiss in our educational system. People do not get taught anything about basic botany. People do not get taught plant identification. So it's something that they're the people we want to talk to. We love talking to our herb community. It's amazing. But we're always telling everyone we can in the herb community. We need to tell everyone. We need to tell people in the car parks and if you're on a dog walk or in the supermarket. Just everyone needs to know something about plants every day.
Harvesting plants is a great way to get bypassers to have a chat. People always want to know what you're up to if you're picking herbs in a car park or by a canal or something. People walk past and have a chat. You know, being out there doing it is one of the best ways to start conversations with people.
Yeah, I've definitely found that to be the case as well. I love that. Well, Kaz and Fee, thank you both so much. Just such a joy and honor again to connect with you, and so excited to see how it all evolves from here. It's just an ongoing adventure. So thank you.
Thanks for having us back. We'll see you again.
And thanks so much for listening and joining us today on the Plant Spirit Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and please follow to subscribe, leave a review, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.